Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing and largest segment of society. To those of you who have finally come to realize, as have I, that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they're all now counterproductive, and that none of them can be fixed, I am Yada. Our number, if you would like to join us in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, toll-free, 877-300-7645. It was an extraordinary 2 hours with you yesterday as we had the board lit up all day with callers. And one of those is someone I want to address again this morning because I want to assure that everyone gets the full benefit of what Roy had to tell us. Roy got up in the middle of the night, and I think he said it was 12:30 in the morning in Australia, to call into this show. And he presented a concept that should do two things. It should, for anyone who is open to evidence and reason, prove absolutely and conclusively, undeniably, that there is a God, that he is the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, that his name is Yahweh, and that he can be trusted. And at the same time, explains his nature, our nature, and our current relationship. And what's amazing is that he did all of this with evidence and reason and with science. Now, what Roy did is that he capitalized on what Schroeder began in the Science of God. Now, we mentioned yesterday that the Science of God is a very effective book for presenting the fact that the 6 days of creation and approximately 15 billion years are equivalent. That the formulas for special relativity, which is a very precise formula, been proven time and again, demonstrate that at the amount of energy present at the creation event, something Yahweh calls the Big Bang in the Torah, that time there would have flowed at a rate such that 6 24-hour Earth days are absolutely equivalent to 14.7 billion years. And now, in Yada Yah, I used 5 different methods of assessing the age of the universe. And I used 5 different methods of assessing the stretching of the cosmic microwave radiation background that comes from the Big Bang. And by using those, my math came out to 6 days. Now, what Roy presented here yesterday is even more profound. What he did is got right to the heart of the matter. The at issue is, what is quark confinement? Now, I know that there are folks listening to this program that are probably not even as comfortable with a scientific discussion as they are with our grammar discussions as we get into the nuances of meaning that actually illuminate Yahweh's Torah testimony, his direction to us. But this is not complicated. You see, what Einstein demonstrated is that energy and matter are exactly the same thing. They're just not the same amount of the same thing. And that matter is a hugely diminished form of energy. And for energy to become matter, for the energy, which is how the creation event occurred from Yahweh's perspective and from the scientific analysis that we have been able to do, it began with light energy. But you see, with light, time does not move. It does not flow. On a photon of light, the relativity demonstrates that time simply exists. Does not flow. So you can't measure an age of the universe at the point that there was just energy. that energy has to dissipate and thus cool to the point that quarks, which are part of the building blocks of atoms and molecules, can be confined. And there are three estimates of that temperature. And when the lowest of those is used, and you multiply it by the 2 point used as a factor, currently the 2.73 Kelvin background radiation temperature, if you will, of the universe is measured from our various probes. The universe appears to be 13.7 billion years old. If you take the highest of those temperatures, you find that the universe is, just using the math, 15.7 billion years old. And the median of the three, 14.7. Now, 14.7, if you do the math, using, yeah, it was 6 days times 24, 6 days, as a factor of years, with the 365 1/4 days per year. When you do the math under that basis, you get exactly what God told us, that he created the universe in 6 days. Einstein provided us with the formula, all of which science has affirmed. Science has provided us with the temperatures, not only of quark confinement, but also of the current temperature of the universe. It's indisputable, folks. At the point of creation, the universe was created in exactly 6 24-hour days, with us still existing in that sixth day. Now, if you think that a 80-year-old shepherd, Moshe, known to many as Moses, came up with that on his own, and that he somehow had a scientific mind that could combine all of the collective intellect that man has assimilated over these last 3,500 years, and that he beat Einstein to the theory of general and special relativity, and that he understood the relative nature of time, and that there were dimensions beyond that which he could sense himself. Now, if you think he was that guy, then that's an option. If you just wish to blow it all off because, well, that comes from what you think is a Jewish religious book, that's another option. But now you know. In the opening phrases, the opening statement of creation, where Yahweh calls it the Big Bang and systematically lays out the order of events, which are absolutely and 100% consistent with the evidence which is observable today. You have a choice. You can use your intellect and evidence and reason and come to recognize that the probability of that occurring by chance is zero, and therefore it was inspired by a being who is an actual witness to creation. And then you need to deal with what follows, which is the presentation of life in the Garden of Eden of great joy, which is indicative of an eternity with God, and then the covenant, which is to how to engage in his family, to be part of his family. You need to take it seriously. He proved his existence. Now, the second part of what Roy demonstrated, I want to also attempt to summarize. Now, he is more eloquent at this than I am. But he gave us the example of what he called Flatland. And then that's a two-dimensional construct. And there's Mr. and Mrs. Flatland, and they are are moving around as lines, and they're two-dimensional space. Consider it like a piece of paper that's animated with drawings on it. And in Flatland, Mr. and Mrs. Flatland can observe themselves. They can observe one-dimensional constructs. They can notice everything that's around them within the two dimensions, but they have no capacity whatsoever to observe us in three dimensions. And yet we can look at the piece of paper and the two-dimensional construct, and we certainly can observe them. We are in a three-dimensional construct. Yahweh is in at least four, more likely seven. Which means that he can observe us, and yet we can't see him. Now, it goes further than that. And this is one of the things that has always escaped my understanding until yesterday. And that is, consider the amount of energy required to create a universe with 100 billion galaxies, averaging 100 billion stars and solar systems. And then consider that that represents about 5% of the known universe. It makes God so large, so overwhelmingly energetic, that the familial portrait he has drawn of himself, of being the father of the covenant, becomes very difficult to visualize with him being that enormous. But Roy answered that question yesterday using science. Again, Flatland versus the three-dimensional construct we are in. There is an infinite difference in the amount of energy that is available in a three-dimensional construct than in a two. All the two gets is that which passes through it. Just as there is an infinite amount of energy available in a four-dimensional construct that isn't available in the three. God can still be Father. He can still be approachable. He can be an individual. But in a dimension beyond ours, which is how he has all of that enormous energy and can make this universe and still be individual. Welcome back to Chapter Mystic. The next aspect of what Roy revealed to us that is worth reinforcing is that a three-dimensional object cannot enter a two-dimensional realm. You know, if we were to try to go from three-dimensional to two-dimensional, the only way to do that would be to reduce ourselves almost infinitely. And so only a tiny aspect of what we are can enter a three-dimensional realm. And I say this because in Pauline Christianity, the individual misnamed Jesus Christ is called the fullness of the Godhead existing bodily. Now, that's physically impossible. It's an outright lie. It's not even consistent with Yahusha's own testimony nor Yahweh's testimony. But what this systematic evaluation of science proves is that the very basis of Christianity, whether Jesus Christ becomes the totality of God, is an impossibility. It's not a miracle, it's an impossibility. Only a diminished manifestation of a three-dimensional object can enter two-dimensional space. The same thing would be true with a four-dimensional object. A four-dimensional individual can only have a tiny aspect of himself. A friend of mine listening to this program yesterday wrote that it's very akin to the illustration that I've used so many times, which is Walt Disney and Mickey Mouse. Walt Disney is in a three-dimensional construct. He created Mickey Mouse in a two-dimensional construct. And so, while Walt Disney has an infinite amount of energy and capability beyond that of Mickey Mouse, the object that he created, and can visualize everything and witness everything Mickey Mouse is doing, all that Walt can do is influence it by his actions. He can't enter the world of Mickey Mouse. And so you get a very different impression of the nature of who God is and where he is, and that Christian mythology that God is omnipresent. You know, that they are constantly talking about God is with them and in them and always there and answering all their little requests. It's an impossibility. And so Roy provided us with a very valuable insight yesterday. And it's important that we summarize them so that we can incorporate them into our perspective. It is exactly as I had expected. I'm sure for many of you it is the same. And the thing that I liked about Roy is that while the insights were profound, he simplified them in a way that we could all understand them. We have Robert calling in from California who wants to talk about the hands up, don't shoot mythology that was promoted in Ferguson. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Ada. Yeah, my question, undoubtedly you've heard about the hands up, don't shoot lie being promoted by the Abominators regime.
Well, it's not just them. It was really it was initially the Al Sharptons and the like that ran to Ferguson just as they ran to Trayvon Martin. And in both cases, they picked really rotten young men to rally around. And they ended up looking like fools because the story they wanted the world to believe was inaccurate. So when the truth came out, they had to leave. But, you know, it's an interesting thing that when you establish a myth, aspects of that myth linger on even though its foundation has proven to be false. In the case of hands up, don't shoot, that is the case. His hands were not up. He did not say don't shoot. And we know that for a fact, and yet the myth still prevails.
Down to... Is this an example of them promoting deadly and deceptive lies in the name or in the Shem of Yehovah, though, or not?
Yeah, I don't think so. Obama is a blend of a perversion of Christianity. Of Islam, where he becomes equivalent to Muhammad and God, and of socialist secular humanism. He is a blend of those things. And everything he says as if he were God. Time magazine got it right when they presented him right before the inauguration, and in their lead story said it is as if he were God. So he presents himself that way. So I think he does trespass upon that problem. But I don't think the Sharptons of the world do. They're simply in it to promote themselves and nothing more. As we're having a conversation with Robert, I think that there are a lot of lessons from Hands Up, Don't Shoot. And I'm glad you brought it up because of the lessons we can learn from it. One is that there were two police murders that should have elicited the public outcry. And it shouldn't have had to be prompted by an Al Sharpton. And that was the young boy, 9 years old, that was murdered in cold blood by the two cops in Cleveland when they drove up at high speed across the grass about 10 feet from the boy, would have scared him to death, didn't talk to him. Simply within 2 seconds of the time that they had pulled up, he was dead. And then to have the police commission there exonerate the officers and blame the boy for a toy gun, for his own death. Now, the whole nation should have rallied around that. The nation should have rallied around I Can't Breathe, the case in New York, whereby a man who was trying to stop a fight was aggressively choked to death by a police officer. But they didn't. And it is extraordinarily odd to me that the Al Sharptons of the world have so poor judgment, their judgment is so flawed, that they rally around individuals that aren't worthy of anyone's concern. Now, Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown, neither one deserved to die, but they brought their deaths upon themselves. We really ought not feel any pain for them. They brought it on themselves. And the other thing that struck me that was just so bad about this whole thing is that the issue isn't a racial issue. It's the nationalization and the brutality of police that is the issue. When George Bush created the Department of Homeland Security after 9/11, I think it was the death knell. If you want to deal with the death of America, that may have been the final blow, because it integrated a national Gestapo, a national police that was highly militarized, that as Homeland Security had the same mission as the military, and that the lines between spying, the NSA, the CIA, and enforcement between the FBI and the ATF and the alcohol bureaus, police, and national policing agencies of all different kinds, and local police were blurred. And the line between them and the military became almost non-existent. That's what we ought to be focusing on. It's a world where our freedoms are being eroded, where we're told constitutionally that we can't have and keep and bear weapons, and yet our local, state, and national policing agencies are armed with incalculable numbers of military weapons. It is the very thing that Jefferson was worried about, and is why he was not an endorser of the U.S. Constitution. So, my friend, yes, I think you bring up excellent points on all of those issues. Anything more you'd like to add to that, Robert?
Okay. I guess if I gather from what you said before the break, it sounds like for the purposes of Yahweh's third statement carved in stone, mm-hmm. someone explicitly claims or mm-hmm. pretends to be or speak for God,
yep.
They're treading on that territory.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. For those who are listening that are not as well informed as Robert is here, there are no Ten Commandments. There are ten statements. Only one of them is written in the imperative. And the one that's written in the imperative, which is the only mood that can, in some cases, convey a command, is what most would call the fifth, which is the one that requires volition, which is honoring one's mother and father, having nothing to do with your earthly mother and father. This is your heavenly father and spiritual mother. So there are ten statements. They're carved on two tablets. The first three are on the first tablet. The first three are overriding statements of who God is, and they, in essence, present the terms and conditions of the covenant, and they summarize the Torah. And then there are seven instructions on how we should interact with our fellow man and with God, and he's using our interactions with one another to demonstrate how we should interact with him. In the third of those, it does not say thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, which is what's put up in Christian cathedrals and in courthouses. The Lord is not there. The word for take is not there. The word for vain and sense of egotistical is not there. What it actually says, and then Christians will say that means you can't say God damn. Well, God damn is a sentence in Hebrew. Yosha himself said it. Yahweh says it. It means in Hebrew it would be, if we use the title, it would be Elohim Azab, God damn. Azab is to separate. To forsake, to walk away from a relationship, to divorce oneself of a relationship is to damn, to separate from. So that third statement that is etched in stone, it says that that you should not, in the name and reputation of Yahweh, engage in that which promotes, accepts, tolerates lifelessness and deception. Because those who promote, accept, and advance lies and deceptions which lead to lifelessness, Yahweh will never forgive. So, it is, as Robert has said, when you're dealing with that statement, which is condemning of everyone who is overtly religious, it is condemning of everyone who is overtly militaristic. If you are promoting the military as a means of salvation, you would be in violation of this. If you're promoting a political party as a means of national security and of taking care of people, you'd be in violation of this. If you're promoting a religion as a means to salvation, you would be in absolute violation of this and cannot be forgiven. Now, fortunately, Robert, as we have learned, every one of the 10 statements was written in the imperfect. Now we're moving from science to grammar. But what the imperfect means is that if you continue to do these things, that you cannot be forgiven. Which means all you have to do is stop. And the Torah has a means of forgiving you. Now, the reality is that most people who are overtly political, overtly militaristic, overtly patriotic, overtly religious, they aren't about to stop. They'll go to their graves continuing to promote the lie. You know, Robert, Yahweh's testimony is sufficiently clear for us to project on many individuals and say they not only are violating this, but that the likelihood based on their behavior is they will continue for all of their lives. Pope Francis. Absolute violation and was never going to change. You can say he will absolutely be condemned based upon the third statement etched in stone. The Abominator. No question about it. Virtually every Christian pastor. Every Muslim imam. And so you can apply this rationally, appropriately, logically, to those who are in clear violation of it. When you get into the Al Sharptons, where he's really not a pastor, he's really not presenting himself from a religious point of view. He's far more in this for the politics, and it's a politic only of his people's salvation. As he moves it from self-aggrandizement to trying to encourage people to embrace his politics as a means to benefit themselves, then I think he does move into violation of it.
Well, the Roman emperors, they claimed to be a god and promoted a religious scheme. That's what condemns them.
You know, I can't wait to be at Hadrian's trial. You know, as I study history, Hadrian stands out as among the most despicable individuals, speaking of Roman emperors. You know, he's the fellow that after the temple was destroyed to build the Roman Colosseum, stood there in the Temple Mount of Jerusalem, encouraged Jews to come back, saying that he would rebuild the city and the temple, and that he only lured them to come back so that he could wipe them out. And then he announced when they had returned that, oh, yeah, we're going to rebuild the city as a vacation retreat for Roman legionnaires, and the temple we're going to build here is to me, and we're going to rename the temple after, the city after me. Yeah, I can't wait to be at his trial. Yeah, there are certain individuals that there is absolutely no question. Muhammad, Paul, Rabbi Akiba, the founder of Judaism. They will all be found guilty of this. They'll spend eternity in hell. But, you know, Robert, for a substantial part of my life, I was an evangelical Christian. I was ordained in the Presbyterian Church. I was one of these people guilty of doing this from a religious point of view. I was very active politically. You know, we talk about John McCain often on this program. I know him personally. He's been in my home. I've been in his. He's been in my planes. We've spent a lot of time together. We can go on down. We've talked about Henry Kissinger. I know him personally. We've had dinner together. George W. Bush, been in his home. I was very active politically, and I was part of the problem. I was a flag-waving patriot. But fortunately, the statement that you were referencing, the third that Yah etched on the first of those two tablets, was written in the imperfect. And all we have to do is stop promoting those lies and deceptions. And then we're no longer guilty of that instruction. What Yah told us to do in the second and third statement that he etched in stone was to avoid promoting illusions that people cling to as if they were true. And throughout human history, illusions have always been popular. There is no time in human history where religions weren't extraordinarily popular. They are today. They're all illusions. Delusions, if you prefer. But the very thing that Robert called in with hands up, don't shoot, that is an illusion. It's not what happened with Michael Brown. And it's being presented as racial profiling and an example of racism in America. And even the Obaminator came out and condemned Ferguson for being a racist policing community. Without evidence, mind you. And it has nothing to do with racism. You know, when we filter stories the wrong way, when our perspective is wrong, and when we miss the big issue, in the case of Ferguson, the big issue was the over-application of militaristic police forces. And having Officer Wilson's first instinct to reach for his gun and to be a gunslinger as opposed to think it through and say, you know, there's a better way to deal with this. And that instinct, this gun first, shoot first, and which is what caused the death of the young boy in Cleveland. And the over-arming, the over-militarization of our policing force, that's the big issue. But the basic issue was completely missed. And the big issue is being justified as they are here to protect us. In other words, they're taking the role of Yahweh. Yahweh says, walk away from those things. They're not there to protect you. You should not trust human institutions. Walk away from them. Disassociate from them. And yet they're being presented, as is our military, as a source of protection, when they're not. They're a source of depriving us of our freedoms, of our rights. And so the big picture is missed by the illusions. You know, it's the nature of Christianity. It's an illusion put right on top of the truth. And so the illusion, the delusion that Paul crafted has credibility, and it fools people because it was a lie piled right on top of the truth, giving the lie credibility. And so what you find is that in our society, and it's been true now for recorded history, most people will go along. They'll simply accept the lie. And most people do it, Robert, because to step outside of that, to bow your back, to go against the crowd is difficult. And most people don't want to do it. It's It's lonely. It's scary. And that's where we find ourselves. Now, can you imagine being in an environment, though, that's as bad as Afghanistan, at least the Afghanistan that America created after its invasion? Where you have a just stunning. Think of the situation of this woman. She was rightly accusing an imam of selling superstitions and of selling superstitious trinkets to ward off all sorts of spiritual ailments. And she was accusing him, and because he was embarrassed by that and couldn't refute her, he accused her falsely of burning a Quran, and all of those people around just instinctively, because they're not thinking, they're just responding in the Islamic mindset, which is a slash and burn, enraged mindset. They took this woman who was doing the right thing, and they beat her with bats. They burned her body, burned her alive, and then dragged her through the streets, all chanting, Allahu Akbar, Allah is older, bigger, and greater. Imagine living in a culture like that, where when society responds, the group response is that perverted. It's a lot worse than what we have here, at least at this point, when you have a community of African Americans and extreme liberals in Ferguson that riot and burn shops down and shout slogans, deceived. Similar mindset, but it's at least a smaller segment of society in the West that is doing it than is doing it in the world of Islam. Robert, thank you for the call. We'll be back after the news and commercial break.